Quick review. On the right-hand side, looking at that diagram, what hypersensitivity reaction is that blood vessel going through? Just look at the diagram. One, two, three, or four?
Four.
Look at the diagram. What do you see? You have antibody directed to a target cell or tissue. What do we call that? Two. I don't see any cells. I see that fork. It's an antibody. But if I look at these blood vessels or the tubular epithelial cells, what hypersensitive reaction is that? One, two, or three, four, just looking at it. Four, because what is it called? And do you see cells there? There you go. See how easy that is? Muy fácil. Tubular epithelial cells. Cytotoxic. There's the tubular epithelial cells. There's blood vessels. What do we see there? Macrophages, cytotoxic T8 cells. So it's cell mediated by definition, right? How many people have bought that medical dictionary? Stedman's. It's right in your syllabus. You're all required. I want you to bring your dictionary to the exam. I want it solid. Everybody's got to bring a medical dictionary to the exam on November 2nd. Borrow it, but everyone has to have one.
Can you use it?
Yes, you can. Wait, you don't want to use it? That's awesome. Well, if you want, remember there's 50 questions on the midterm. So you better know it'll help you, but I wouldn't be wasting my time looking at every definition. But you can bring it, and you can use it. But you've all got to bring it. Minus 5 points. That's easy. Wait, don't you want to have help? No? You're a tough crowd to muster here. Silence. Here's a blood vessel. You see cells coming in, destroying it. This is a vascular ejection, so cells destroying the vessel is what type of hypersensitivity reaction? What is it?
Four.
I described it to you. Cytotoxic T8 cells destroying the blood vessel wall is acute vascular rejection. If I have cytotoxic T8 cells coming and destroying the tubular epithelial cells, and here are cytotoxic T8 cells, what hypersensitivity reaction is that? Come on, everyone say it, get in the mood.
Four,
good. It's like exercise class. Shout it out, be proud. Acute rejection is in the first 6 months. Chronic rejection, what type of tissue is replacing the damaged epithelium that's been destroyed? And I say chronic. No. I'm destroying the tubular epithelium. What tissue am I replacing it with? It tells me because I say chronic. In any chronic condition, scar tissue, this is fibrosis. Remember when you have tissue injury, you damage it, if the cells can't regenerate, what's the only outcome the human body can do? Fibrosis, that's it. It doesn't matter what I pick. If I describe a chronic process, what's the end result going to lead to? In any tissue, a joint, a bone, a tendon, an eye, scarring. That's all you got to dream about. Does it matter what I pick? What book do we use to do well? Medical dictionary. Because chronic tells me what's the likelihood of scarring, going high or low? High. Remember that? We talked about it for 2 weeks over. Okay. Acquired immune deficiency, one obviously common one in the world, a global issue, is HIV destroying CD4 helper cells. And that includes that are CD4 positive, not only helper T cells, but also macrophages. Iatrogenic, what does iatrogenic mean? By you two. Selfie. This is a selfie time. It's where you do things that are not appropriate, that causes morbidity, mortality. Anybody who touches a patient can be iatrogenic. What's a classic example? Irradiation. You radiate tissue, you damage it. You can cause wiping out your bone marrow, stem cells, especially dividing. You give people who are immunosuppressive drugs for cancer, autoimmune disease. We'll talk about SLE and scleroderma. Or if you have malignancies, like leukemia, rise your bone marrow, you destroy your ability to make white blood cells. So what happens to the ability to fight off infections? Decrease, you're immunocompromised. Systemic diseases. You have patients you'll have that have diseases like autoimmune, or another name for this you'll hear is collagen vascular diseases, where like SLE or scleroderma. These are examples of what they call collagen vascular disease or autoimmune diseases. We'll look at a couple of those in a minute. Another one is diabetics. Will you have diabetic patients? Guaranteed your money back. So diabetes, how does diabetes lead to an immunocompromised state? Well, sugar is going to go through non-enzymatic glycosylation of molecules on the surface of cells. Remember that movie I showed you of the selectins and integrins rolling the white blood cells? But they required the binding to those receptors, didn't they, on those cells? So now if you were to glycosylate them non-enzymatically, attaching glucose molecules, what happens to the binding? Increased or decreased? Decreased. So the white blood cells can't even get out of the intravascular space, as an example. The glucose is also taken up by neutrophils, and you produce polyalcohol, sorbitol, and it causes damage to the neutrophils where they can't crawl, they can't eat. They can't digest once they produce the phagolysosome. So when you're a diabetic, you're immunocompromised. And you always have to remember, especially when you're uncontrolled, that's where they're a problem. And the other is they cause damage to all their blood vessels. Thousands and thousands of miles of capillaries, arterioles, arteries. They're being damaged because of that glucose. What's the leading cause of blindness in the United States? Is diabetes mellitus, because you're damaging the vasculature of the retina. What's the leading cause of lower extremity amputation? Diabetes. What's the leading cause of chronic renal failure in the United States? Just have to say it, diabetes. 40% of diabetics will get damage to the glomeruli, to the vessels, and damage the kidney, and you become immunocompromised. So diabetic. Another one, how many people drink alcohol? All right, good. This story is for you. How many people like raw oysters? Raise your hand. All right, this story is for you too. Oh, yeah, it's a combo. So alcohol is an immunosuppressant. So I'm going to give you a clinical story. Here's raw oysters. When they bring raw oysters to you, they put them on what? Ice. Why do they put them on ice? They don't rot. No. There are bacteria that get in there because when's the problem of eating raw oysters? During the summer months. Because the temperature in the ocean water goes above 20 degrees Celsius, there's a particular bacterium that goes up in concentration in the salt water of the ocean. And this is a filtering organism. And it can filter it, but it's been living with that organism for millions of years. It's lived a symbiotic relationship. And when you look at raw oysters, they don't look pussy, they don't smell, they're just on ice. Okay, so now, here's the story. 55-year-old, this is a true story, I don't make up stories. 55-year-old Mexican-American woman who was a known alcoholic for 20 years. Her primary beverage was beer. And she was a connoisseur of raw oysters. In the summer of 1987, July, in East Los Angeles, she went to the local Mercado. It was 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And she was looking for all raw oysters, and they were not on ice. They looked just like that, but not on ice. She took them home with a few beers, ingested them. They tasted pretty good, according to the history she gave to the ER physicians. The next day, she went back to the market to get more beer and oysters. Because she didn't have health care insurance, she started to notice that she had not feeling well, and she developed lesion on her forearm. And this is what we would typically call a contusion or bruise, an ecchymosis, bleeding problem. We're going to talk about hemodynamics later this hour as well. We'll start it, and then we'll talk about it more in depth next week. And she denies any trauma. Didn't get in a fight over oysters with anybody. Didn't fall down, drunken stupor. She denied it. And she's not feeling well, so she comes to the ER physician about within 24 hours of the ingestion of the oysters. And she's telling this history to the ER physician. And on physical exam, they notice this bruise or contusion on her right hip. And she relays that she had previous hip surgery because of degenerative joint disease 10 years ago with no complications and full range of motion. The rest of his physical exam was unremarkable. She had no fever, she had no palpitations, nothing with her heart, lungs, abdominal, nothing. They did a urine analysis, did a chest x-ray was normal, and because of the ingestion of the history of the oysters, they give her triple IV antibiotics and she's dead in less than 24 hours. She has no collagen-vascular disease. She's not taking any medications, no immunosuppressive drugs, no steroids. She's not diabetic. All you do is have a history of this ingestion and alcohol. And she's dead within 24 hours. So where does the autopsy begin? In the skin, the largest organ of the body. Let's go take a look at these lesions. So if you look up here at the top, here's the epidermis, here's the dermis, and what's the most predominant collagen found in our dermis? Type 1, because it has to have tensile strength, just like in our bones. Then you see the fat. We're going to go to higher magnification. Here we see individual fat cells, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Here we see a PMN, segmented, marginating, attached to an endothelial cell. We see red blood cells here. Here's a monocyte. Here's another PMN. The normal connective tissue is what color? Pink, because it's basically connective tissue collagen type 1. Eosin is binding to it. But we notice what color is out here. What color do you see here? Blue and purple. Okay. Odd. What is that? Then we go to another blood vessel. Here's the lumen of a vessel. You see the leukocytes are marginating. And then you see these little blue dots here and here. And each one of these is a bacterium. What's horrific about this photograph? There's no what. If you had bacteria growing in your flesh, what would you expect to see? There are no neutrophils. This is what's horrific. She is severely immunocompromised. She has no inflammatory response to this huge amount of bacteria growing in her flesh. It was all over her body, not just her skin. So the question is, how is alcohol being immunosuppressive? So this is when you're drinking alcohol, you see people drinking and eating raw oysters, you'll think of this story. And what could be going on? So let's go back a little biochemistry. How many people like biochemistry? All right, got one, a minority. Oh boy, I could see. You've been brutalized by biochemical molecules. Biochemistry is a very sexy topic. It's how you approach it. So if we take alcohol, for those that like formulas and stick models, it's a 2-carbon alkane with a hydroxyl group attached to it. It can be broken down by enzymes. There's two organ systems that break down alcohol. The liver, and what's the other place you break down alcohol besides your liver? The brain, no. I'm just making you think. I want you to use your noodle. Not pancreas, no.
Muscles.
Your lungs. When they pull you over for DUI, what test do they administer on you? A breath analyzer. The only reason it works is because you metabolize alcohol. Why would the liver and the lung have to be able to metabolize or detoxify molecules? Because what's the gut giving the blood? It's coming from the outside world, goes to the liver. What do you take in with every breath? The environment. And whatever's in there, it can get in and has to be detoxified if there's any type of molecules. So that's why the breath analyzer works. That's why they're having a problem with marijuana, because it's not quite metabolized. They're trying to work out a test to use a breath analyzer like alcohol. So you see, you learn a little bit something of practicality. The moral story is don't drink and drive. Mixing gasoline and alcohol is not a good idea. So you have enzymes called alcohol dehydrogenase breaks it down to acetaldehyde. Then acetaldehyde dehydrogenase breaks into acetate. How many people who do drink alcohol turn bright red after just a small quantity of alcohol? Raise your hands. All right, you've now looked for the designated drivers. You just spotted them. When you go to a party, those are the ones you want them to drive. Why? Because they don't have the enzyme acetaldehyde dehydrogenase. It's not efficient. Because they accumulate acetaldehyde, because it can't be metabolized, which is a potent vasodilator. That's why they turn bright red. But if you accumulate too much of the acetaldehyde, it not only vasodilates, but it's cytotoxic, you become very ill. There are drugs that are given to people who are trying to get off alcohol to block that enzyme so they, if they do fall back on alcohol consumption, they'll get violently sick because of this. Now we have acetate. Acetate is converted to acetyl coenzyme A. Do you remember what biochemical pathway acetyl coenzyme A goes into? Krebs cycle. See, it's not so bad. The Krebs cycle. What does the Krebs cycle produce every turn of the cycle? NADH, which are important proton donors to drive oxidative phosphorylation to generate ATP. It's really that simple. So now, in a biochemical pathway, if I produce a lot of product, what's the pathway? A negative feedback is to stop the pathway. Remember that from very simple biochemical principle. So if I produce a lot of product in that biochemical pathway, it'll produce negative feedback and shut it down. So that's what happens in the PMNs, that you produce so much acetyl coenzyme A from the alcohol that it goes back and shuts down the Krebs cycle. So if the Krebs cycle shuts down, what happens to oxidative phosphorylation? Shuts down, and what you can't make now? ATP. So can you now bind and roll on the surface of the endothelial cell to get out? Can you now squeeze through it? Can you migrate? Can you now phagocytize? Are those passive states or energy-dependent states of activity? And that's why we couldn't see any neutrophils getting in and destroying the bacteria. That's why you're immunocompromised in acute alcohol intoxication. Moral story is, don't get acutely intoxicated while you're eating your oysters, especially during the summer months, because that's the highest concentration that you find in the oyster. And what do you, when they harvest the oysters from the oyster beds, where do they put them on? On a boat. And what do you think is on that boat that they put the oysters on?
Bacteria.
Ice. Not bacteria. It's already inside the oyster. You saute it with the little bacteria, sprinkle it on. No. They put it on ice. Anything that's harvested from these oyster beds, clams, what do they have on the boat? Ice to refrigerate it, because they do not want that bacteria to grow. Okay? It also sets down beta oxidation or free fatty acids. It also generates NADH in the mitochondria of the PMNs and other cells. It will also prevent the conversion of acetyl coenzyme A to pyruvate to acetyl coenzyme A. It'll also break down DHP glycolysis. You don't have to memorize. I'm not going to ask this on the exam. I'm just showing you how it's critical that when you talk about pathogenesis or a story of a patient, it involves the anatomy, histology, the immune system, the biochemistry, the behavior, the sociology, behavioral science. All these have a critical role. As they converge, you have a patient who went into septic shock because she had a large inoculum of bacteria from those raw oysters during the summer months. And that is what happens in patients. Everybody looks at these TV shows of CSI, and they always say they want the magic bullet within 40 minutes, because you got commercials in between, of course, to fill in the hour. But in real life, you have to realize, in the human being, it's often parallel processes that are running together until they converge, they now reveal themselves. So basically, the immunosuppression of the neutrophil was that they basically couldn't fight off what type of infections? Bacterial. And she was unfortunate that she consumed much of that. What was also found at autopsy was this. This is her liver. She didn't realize she has cirrhosis of the liver. See those nodularity bumps all over that? That's regenerating nodules. And what is the liver? It makes complement, doesn't it? It makes clotting factors. Because she can't make clotting factors, that's why she was having the bruising, because she could not get hemostasis. so she was in septic shock. And plus, she can't make complement, which is important for opsonization, C3B, and chemoattractants. And that's why the neutrophils were sitting in the blood vessel lumen and not fighting the bacteria. And she did not know it. Everybody in our society is always worried about what you look like on the outside. You're far more interesting on the inside. The outside, it's okay. But it's the inside that counts. So you can walk around anywhere and there are things going on that you don't realize until you get the right components coming together, you get this scenario. And this is why you can see how you can become immunocompromised at different levels. Their liver was shutting down, plus the alcohol, and then she eats a large inoculum of bacteria, and they all converge to produce, unfortunately, death in this case. Yes.
You said that she got IV antibiotics, and that didn't do anything, or it was too late?
It was too late. Antibiotics only can work when you have an intact immune system. Right? Antibiotics only help to break down, but if you can't have the ability to clean up the rest, what happens? Because bacteria can go into places where the antibiotic level can't get to. Now you're in trouble. Good question. We have limitations to what we can do with individuals. So this is just to take pause and think of how precious our immune system is that we often take it for granted. Until we see something like this, yes.
What type of necrosis is that?
No, that's not that's cirrhosis. It's regenerating nodules and scarring because of the chronic alcohol consumption. Because what did I give you the history? She was drinking alcohol for how many years?
20.
So
this is fibrosis?
Fibrosis and regenerating nodules. That's what we call cirrhosis, yes. Neutrophil count was normal.
Well, they just couldn't get out.
Huh?
They just couldn't get out.
They couldn't get out of the. They were being produced by the bone marrow, but they were non-functional because they didn't have enough ATP to do their thing. Plus, you didn't have complement. How do PMNs know where to go? They have to have what? A chemical gradient. And this bacteria was not enough to produce a chemical gradient, and they were incapacitated. So next time you see people eating raw oysters and drinking alcohol, think of this story. Mm-hmm. How do I like my oysters? Cooked. I want them nuked. It's too slimy when they're raw as an invertebrate. Anyway, that'll keep you thinking about it. Better than caffeine in the morning when you think of stories like this. Yes. It could be, but they usually don't. Remember, a fish would be basically getting their gills and going through that. So they would ingest some of it. So you got to be careful when there's high bacteria in that the water. What's the bacterium called? For those that want to know what it is, it's called Vibrio vulnificus. Vibrio cholera is the fresh water that causes the severe diarrhea. This is the marine version of it. So if you're swimming in an oyster bed and you have an open wound, not a good idea because that skin is broken down, that bacteria can get into your wound and cause a necrotic reaction to your tissue. You thought, see, it's safe to be in the lecture hall, right? Rather than be out there in the oyster bed swimming around, cutting yourself, oh my goodness, what could happen? So who should not eat raw oysters? Should be people that are diabetics or immunocompromised, people who are taking antacids, because what is a way of killing bacteria in your stomach is the acid. So don't be taking antacids. People who have AIDS, inflammatory bowel disease, like Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, because it breaks down the barrier of the gut where the bacteria can get into your bloodstream. So there are all these different scenarios. But it's a condition that does occur. All right, autoimmune disease. What does auto mean? Yes?
Sorry, where did the bruises come from?
The bruises came from because one of the things that is important when we talk about bruises, because you're going to see people with bruises, right, as physical therapists. So the way you assess a bruise is three components that can lead to bleeding or extravasation into the tissue of your dermis. One, is there a problem with the structural integrity of the blood vessel wall? It's weakened. And we'll go through this when we get the hemodynamic derangement. Another one is there a problem with the platelets that have to make a plug, a hemostatic plug? Another is your clotting factors. What cells make clotting factors in the body? Are your hepatocytes. Since her hepatocytes were damaged, she couldn't make clotting factors, and what happens? She could have spontaneous hemorrhage very easily as a consequence. So that's how you would assess it. So each one of these, is it a problem with the platelets, a problem with the blood vessel wall, is it a problem with the clotting factors, like your liver?
You don't know if she fell on her hip and arm or something?
No, it can be spontaneous. We call this a bleeding diathesis, where you get extravasation into the skin or internal organs. Doesn't matter. You may not see it. It may be bleeding in your urinary system and you pee out blood. Or you could cough up blood coming from the respiratory tract. So just spontaneous bleeding everywhere. But you may not see it, but it can occur. What does auto mean? Self. So, autoimmune diseases can occur at any age, but it's particularly common in females and reproductive age. And I'll get back to one way you can think of what's going on, why this would occur. The first thing is, who gets autoimmune disease are people who are genetically altered. Their immune system has been altered in a way that they can't self-regulate their own self-antigen. Since we turn over 1 billion cells an hour, our immune system is seeing these cells all the time, right? So we have to suppress our T and B cells to make sure, because it's chronic antigen exposure, so we don't get autoimmune diseases. And when we have chronic antigen exposure, it will then cause those cells that are to be killed off through apoptosis. That's how the immune system regulates, so we don't get it. So what sex is seeing antigens at a higher level in reproductive age every month is a female. Because what's happening to their endometrial tissue when you have a period? It's dying. And when it dies, you have this highly vascularized tissue called the uterus that essentially you're releasing a large inoculum of antigen into the maternal circulation that now, if she's genetically altered and can't suppress immunologic reaction to those antigens, and what's the part of the cell in the body that has so much complex antigens is your nucleus of a cell. Remember, the nucleus is inside of a cell, right? So how does the immune system normally, when it sees, it can't see it normally because it's inside the cell, but if it dies and you now exposed all these histones, nucleotides, centromeres, all this nuclear antigenic material, then you can, if you have a suppression of your immune system, you can get an autoimmune disease, okay? So you have to have somebody who does not have self-tolerance to these antigens. Then what's going to happen is you have an environmental trigger, like an infection. Typical thing that can set off an autoimmune disease, it could be a virus. And then you make antibodies to that virus, but those antibodies can cross-react to your self-antigens and then lead to an autoimmune disease because you're genetically altered, you get tissue injury. So this is destruction of yourself. Now, don't get a heart attack looking at this. It's to set the tone for what I'm going to use two examples from this chart. I don't want you to memorize this. These are the classic autoimmune diseases. Systemic lupus erythematosus. It can also be induced by drugs people take. That could be the antigen that can trigger antibodies to it that can now cause an autoimmune process. Then we have a problem with fibroblasts that are overactive or overstimulated by cytokines because the macrophage and inflammatory cells stimulate the fibroblasts, laying down a lot of collagen. So we call the sclerosis or fibrosing process. And I'll show you examples of that. And there's subtypes, crest and diffuse. Then there's one that involves T helper cells, Sjogren's, that involves the parotid or salivary glands, lacrimal glands. It can also involve the joints. It can be associated with rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune disease, destroying it, which is hypersensitivity reaction type 4, and there are other diseases like inflammatory. But when you look at all of these autoimmune diseases, what do you see in the top line? What's the major source of antibodies to? The nucleus. So when you have a patient who has an elevated antibodies to nuclear antigens, we call this ANA, when you see this term. It's nonspecific. It just tells you you have a problem of self-tolerance. Now we use other molecules within the nucleus to discern what subtype do we want to call this, or call this autoimmune. So what's the big thing for SLE is double-stranded DNA. When they see double-stranded DNA, you make antibodies to it. So this is now an antibody to a soluble molecule. What hypersensitivity reaction have I just described? Three, right? It's an antibody directed to a soluble molecule, a fragment of double-stranded DNA. On the exam, I'm going to give you clinical stories. You may not have heard about it. Does it matter? As long as I describe it precisely, you should be able to define it, shouldn't you? If you know the definition, just listen to the patient. So another one is to histones, you see by the percentage. And then there's a Smith antigen. These are nuclear ribonuclear proteins. And it was just the patient that described it with Smith. That's why it's called a Smith antigen. So when you have a patient with SLE, you would do serologies. You would look for these antibodies to these antigens. And if they're elevated, plus ANA, and you have the clinical presentation, which I'll show you, we now call it systemic lupus erythematosus. Okay? Now, drugs can induce this, but you notice it only elevates the histones. So that's one way, clinically, you decide, is the SLE because of self-tolerance? And it's not associated with a drug, where one is drug-induced. What's the classic drugs? Procainamide, which is an antiarrhythmic drug. Another one is hydralazine. It's treat hypertension. And there are others. Because when you take a drug, it's a foreign molecule to the human body, isn't it? And so you can now get antibodies to the soluble molecule and produce immunocomplexes that now get deposited in tissues and cause damage. What's the largest organ in the body you would anticipate SLE affecting? Skin. It's highly vascularized. Immunocomplexes get deposited and cause damage. Okay? Scleroderma, you notice it's a big problem with DNA topoisomerase, one. And then centromeric proteins in the centromere of a chromosome. And there are subtypes to it. And then they have elevated ANA. So this is how we can clinically stratify patients, because we can give them different therapies based on the type of autoimmune disease they have, or another name for it, collagen vascular disease. Okay? Any questions? Yes?
Did you say ANA was the antibody
that attacked the nuclear antigen? It's a nuclear antigen. Autoantibodies to the nuclear antigens. That's what ANA stands for. It's nonspecific. Then you look for specific antibodies, particular molecules within the nucleus that I just went through, helps you stratify what you want to call it clinically. Okay? So, I'm going to do this real quick. I'm going to describe the disease. You tell me what hypersensitivity reaction is. Ready? Shout it out. It's like exercise class. Right? Like jumping jacks. One, two, three, four. One, two, three. Okay? You laugh, but you can do this. All right, antibodies to red blood cells. Type 2, it's an antibody directed to a target cell or tissue is 2. Versus 3 is an antibody directed to a soluble molecule. We got to know the difference between a molecule and a cell or tissue, right? What book do you require to take to the exam? Stedman's. All right, antibodies to the TSH receptor on the follicular cells of the thyroid increases the production of thyroxine. It's 2. It's antibody directed to target cell or tissue. I told you the tissue is the thyroid. Just listen to the story and define it. Good pastures, antibodies to the collagen type 4 found in all basement membranes throughout the body, especially the lungs and the kidneys. 2. Very good. You're getting in the mood, I can tell. It's directed to our target cell or tissue. Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Toxic TH cells destroying the follicular cells of the thyroid. 4. See, you're in the mood. You have cytotoxic TH cells coming, destroying the cortex of the adrenal gland, leading to chronic adrenal insufficiency. 4. I hear any antibody? I said cytotoxic TH cells. So it must be? 4. It's cell mediated. That's why it's called cell-mediated. All right. Antibodies to platelets. interfering, leading to bleeding problems. Right. Target cellular tissue. Graves' disease, antibodies to the acetylcholine receptor at the motor end plates in skeletal muscle. Two, antibodies directed to target cellular tissue. Primary biliary cirrhosis, it's antibodies destroying the mitochondria in cells. Is the mitochondria a molecule or an organelle made of a lot of molecules? It is two antibodies to a target cell or tissue. In this case, the mitochondria. Mitochondria is not a molecule, right?
No.
No, I hope not. Otherwise, I've got to go back to school and relearn this stuff. Rheumatoid arthritis, cytotoxicate cells coming in, destroying the joint. Okay. Scleroderma. Triggered cytotoxic TH cells releasing cytokines, stimulating the macrophages, stimulate the fibroblast to make collagen.
Four.
Very good. Sjogren's is B cells coming in and destroying the lacrimal and salivary glands. I said B cells. Cell mediated. B cell? Didn't I say B cell? Good thing it's only October 4th. You got November 2nd, so you got some time here. And Halloween in between. Systemic lupus erythematosus, antibodies directed to double-stranded DNA, leading to immunocomplexes traveling and causing cellular injury. It's three. It's antibody. What's the DNA? Is that a molecule or a cell? It's a molecule. all right, it's all right. I'm patient like a macrophage. I live 620 days. You as neutrophils, you've got 1 or 2 days. Okay? Got to keep a sense of humor about this. See, you're smiling. See, the prognosis is good. Yes. Sure, but you think of T helper cells? You bet. If it's cell mediated, there's all sorts of ways of doing it. Yeah, but the B cells can come in and destroy the organ by infiltrating and proliferating it and then make antibodies secondarily. Yes. Of course. I love clarity. Correct. How's that? Is that clear? Very good. That big smile tells me it's clear. Clarity. If it went the other way, smile would go upside down. All right. Now, let's talk about SLE. Remember we defined it, systemic. It tells you in order to cause systemic damage, I have to be making what? It tells me it's immunocomplex-based 3. I have a soluble molecule, antibodies to double-stranded DNA, Smith antigen, ribonuclear proteins. So I form this immunocomplex, it goes everywhere, and what organ turns red? Because I'm producing damage to the blood vessels. Skin. Because what's the largest organ in the body? Has a lot of blood vessels in it? So that's why you see it. I'll show you this. SLE is commonly, when is it seen, what age? In adolescence. It can also occur under the age. Did an autopsy on an 11-year-old girl, unfortunately. Because she was a foster youth, she didn't get medical intervention soon enough, and the immunocomplexes went to her pulmonary vasculature and caused capillaritis, or inflammation of her capillaries, and she bled to death in her lungs. She drowned in her own blood. She was only 11 years old. So I see these are like friends or foes that you have to understand. These are critical conditions to understand why you're causing the damage. And when it go to various organs, it could be your brain, your skin, your lungs, your kidneys, your eyes, your joints. You're going to cause complement to be activated. You're going to cause an inflammatory response that's going to destroy your own tissue. And this is important to understand. You can see it's more common in females than males. Usually in the adolescents and 20s and 30s. And it tends to be, for reason unknown, tends to be more common and severe in African Americans. So there's some other component. And autoimmune diseases, the underlying is very complex, and they have all these pieces of information, but no unifying understanding of what's going on. So that's why no one can ask you, what's the underlying cause for SLE? No one knows. Like a lot of autoimmune diseases. But there's some genetic alteration. There are multiple components that make up your immune system, and when it becomes altered, it can lead to this consequence. So it's a failure of self-tolerance to your self-antigens, and this is just telling you, you don't have to memorize the percentages, it just shows you the double-stranded DNA, Smith antigen, and to nuclear antigens. It also could go to phospholipids, too, that SLE patients. So phospholipids are found in all bilipid plasma membranes. They can damage any cells, especially endothelial cells, and it can produce thrombosis and infarction. It can be a deadly disease. So here's a, now you don't have to memorize this list. What do you notice? The skin, the kidneys, the heart, serous membranes, what do they have all in common? They have highly vascularized. Where immunocomplex is going to go? To those as well as joints, causing damage. Very good. Because joints have connective tissue around it, and they have blood vessels, and the immunocomplexes can leak out, go into joints, and stimulate an inflammatory response and cause damage to the articulating cartilage. So let's go to skin. Anybody know what malar means? What does malar mean? Butterfly? No. You see a malar flying out there today? Oh, yeah. We've been drinking too much alcohol in the morning. That's what it is. Malar is an anatomic location of the human body. It means cheek. Butterfly. I love this. Don't worry. Medical students do the same thing. They make up stories. Everybody sees the word malar. Oh, it's a butterfly. Because you see, it's butterfly pattern. Well, how many cheeks do you have?
Four.
You have... Cute. We have a, one you can see typically and one you can't see typically. This is the one on the head, not in the gluteus maximus region. There's a comic in every group. That's good. You're all laughing. I set her up for that. So it also could be raised lesions, and they can produce urticaria. And what does bulle mean? Blisters. Because the immunocomplexes can leak from the blood vessels into the epidermis and dermis, cause an inflammatory response, and your skin separates like a blister because of the breakdown of the epidermis to the dermis. Here's a woman who has SLE. If you look at her cheeks, you see how it's red. And because you have two cheeks on the head, it looks like that of the wings of a butterfly. And that's why I call a butterfly rash. But if you look on her forehead, she also has a red rash. That's why it's, what does the term erythematous mean? Red, that's right. And where does 30% of your cardiac output go to? Your head and neck? And that's why those immunocomplexes, and because it's deposited in the skin, it's also going to be activated by photons. That's why sun can exacerbate these patients in terms of the deposition. Okay? And this is what happens. If you look at it microscopically, immunocomplexes get caught here between the epidermis and dermis, and now you get inflammatory cells that digest the collagen and other molecules that make up the base membrane. Now this separates and now leads to a bulle. But if the blood vessels become damaged because the immunocomplexes get trapped here in the wall, these can become thrombosed. You get a vasculitis that now leads to hypoxic injury to the epidermis. It dies and it forms the ulcers in the skin, and it looks like you've been bitten by a wolf. And that's why it's called lupus, as a consequence of this pathogenesis of hypersensory reaction type 3. This is an example of what immunocomplexes do. And here you're seeing the immunocomplexes going in the basement membrane. Another place that causes damage, you don't have to memorize this, there are various lesions that causes damage to the glomerulus because 10 to 15% of your cardiac output goes there, so immunocomplexes go there, cause damage, it causes proliferation of the cells that make up the glomerulus, and it can thicken the basement membrane. This is what a glomerulonephritis looks like in SLE. You see the glomeruli have more cells in them, immunocomplexes are being deposited, causing a cellular reaction and leading to renal failure. Another place it travels is in the cardiovascular system. Besides small blood vessels, it can go to the heart and produce endocarditis, inflammation of the lining, the endocardium, and the valves. It produces this endocarditis, and it can also go to immune complexes in your muscle of the heart, produce a myocarditis, or produce a inflammation on the surface of your heart. We call that pericarditis. This is what it looks like, these vegetations on the surface of the heart. This is the mitral valve, and these are the vegetations because of immunocomplexes causing damage and causing an inflammatory response. So this is showing you that the body is being damaged systemically. That's why we call it systemic, because it tips you off, it's immunocomplex based. What's unique about SLE, the bone marrow is also involved, but it's now antibodies to red blood cells, antibodies to platelets. Now it's what? Hypersensitivity reaction. If I say that antibodies to the platelets or antibodies to the red blood cells, what hypersensitivity reaction is that? Two. So it's really a combination of three and two. But it's primarily three. And then what's the problem? What, these patients are treated with what? With autoimmune disease or steroids, immunosuppressive drugs. And the morbidity is usually associated with opportunistic infections or renal failure. This is an autopsy of a 27-year-old woman who died of one of the complications of systemic infection due to candidiasis. If you look at her, we're going from the back to the front. Here's the epiglottis. Normally, your epiglottis that covers the glottis that goes down to your trachea is usually pink. But you notice what color is it? Red. It's inflamed. And now you see all this inflammation and erosion of the epithelium here, and you see this exudate. This is candidiasis. So she died of systemic fungal infection because she was immunocompromised, because her immune system was crippled, plus she was on immunosuppressive drugs. Scleroderma, real quick, it's a problem of laying down too much collagen, where you get, what does all scar do to tissues? What does scar tissue do? If you have a lot of scar tissue, contracts. Remember, wound contraction. So you're going to get contraction, and you get all these fibroblasts activated by various cytokines. You don't have to memorize this. IL-1, TNF, these are made from macrophages being stimulated by other immunologic cells, and they can go to specific antibodies that you find in serology. Antibodies to these soluble molecules is what hypersensitivity reaction?
Three.
That's right. Or to the centromere, proteins. So you stimulate the fibroblasts, you lead to scarring. In the, what's the largest organ in the body? Skin. So now let's look at your hands. If you put scar tissue in your dermis, what would your hands look like? They would contract like this, like claws. If it was in your face would look like this with no wrinkles. This usually occurs in the 30s and 40s, typically in females. It's damaging the nails because it's going to interfere with blood vessels supply to it, and it's going to contract down. Then you notice, which one do you see more collagen in? On the left side of the skin or the right side? Which panel has more collagen in it, just by the amount of pink? The right. That's what you have, all that collagen being laid down because of the fibroblasts leading to scleroderma. And this is what it happens to the hands. This is called Raynaud's phenomenon, where it blanches the blood vessels in your hands, and then it reperfuses and turns red. This is called Raynaud's phenomenon. And so there's this other one, CREST, and these are the different components. And that is autoimmune diseases. Any questions? So what book are you going to bring to the midterm? Dictionary. That's got your way of doing it. All right, have a great day. And give a hip hop hurrah for your immune system. This podcast was recorded by Dr. Henry Sanchez at the University of California, San Francisco.